Okay. So this morning, the movie is Everything Everywhere All at Once, an incredible movie. We're actually going to start off with the first clip. Before we do that, I'm going to ask Jesse, who's going to be presenting, to stand. Let's give Jesse a really big round of applause. Welcome her. Let's see the first clip.
Jesse, and I have the pleasure of sharing my second favorite movie in the world with you, Everything Everywhere All at Once. Everything Everywhere All at Once gives us the Wang family, Chinese immigrants who for the last 30 odd years have owned a laundromat. The family is headed by Evelyn. Life for Evelyn is chaotic. The laundromat is a daily preoccupation, which she has never particularly loved, but it's worse right now because they're going through an audit. Evelyn has a dozen little projects that she started and stopped, including being a singer, a novelist, a teacher, a chef, and a Watsu technician, whatever that is. However, by expensing all her different interests to the laundromat, she's put their taxes in a very bad place. Then there's her husband, Waymond. Waymond is earnest and playful, and usually he's the lighthearted one in the house, but he has some more serious stuff on his mind right now. Waymond is going to serve Evelyn divorce papers, not because he actually wants to get divorced, but because, according to him, unless it's an emergency, whenever he tries to talk to her, she always gets pulled away. He's hoping that by serving her the papers and making it real, Evelyn will be shocked into realizing that they have to do something about their marriage, Or if she's not shocked into realizing that, then Waymond will have to follow through. Next, there's their daughter, Joy. Joy is a college dropout. She's figuring out her life. She's here visiting with her girlfriend, Becky, and the two of them are supposed to be helping out Evelyn with their taxes, but Evelyn won't let them help. Joy's relationship with her mother hasn't been close since she was a preteen, but over the last couple years, it's become worse because Evelyn is passive-aggressive about her dating girls and refuses to tell Joy's grandfather, Gong Gong, that Joy and Becky are dating. Gong Gong is Evelyn's father. He just recently moved in with the Wangs in America. Gong Gong is not a warm, fuzzy type. He was very demanding with Evelyn when she was a child, and having him around makes Evelyn stressed, and she feels like she has to be in perfect form. She's having this Chinese New Year party tonight, and it's explicitly described as being to impress her father. I really relate to Evelyn's chaos here. I love the way the scene in the laundromat shows her attention bouncing from thing to thing, like she's like cycling through her different priorities. She's never in one place at one time. She's never existing in just one role. She's business owner, mother, daughter, immigrant, person, all at the same time, which is such a mom way to live your life. I'm not a mom, but I do feel like I switch between modes on the regular. Like, I have different programs running in my brain competing for the hardware space. So Evelyn is already stressed out, and then the multiverse stuff happens. So at the end of that clip, you see Waymond jumping around and the screen flashing this strange text. Evelyn doesn't notice because she's a million times too distracted, but in the scene that follows this, it starts to be explained to her what is going on with her husband. So, Waymond's body is being piloted by an alternate universe version of himself who wants to talk to Evelyn. This other version of Waymond calls himself Alpha Waymond because he's from the Alpha universe, the Alphaverse, the universe that can reach out and touch all the others. Alpha Waymond wants to teach Evelyn this same power to send her consciousness through different universes in order to save the entire multiverse from a being of pure chaos known only as Jobu Chipaki. And he communicates all of this to Evelyn while she's at the audit, while she's in an argument with her version of Waymond over their marriage, before she gets confused and punches their tax lady in the face, and then before they end up running from building security. It's a lot. Take a look.
Stay calm. Your brain is under an incredible amount of stress.
Let me finish talking with my husband. He needs to know how good my life could have been.
Beyond her limit. warning. Unstable. Those overloaded mind useless eyes. Instead, my brother's fracture.
Evelyn finds out that the version of herself from the Alphaverse is dead, killed by the agent of chaos, Jobu Tupaki. But worse, she discovers that this chaos agent is the Alphaverse version of her own daughter, Joy. Jobu experiences every reality at the same time, and it drove her crazy years ago. She's turned her craziness against the multiverse, and she's building something that's casting a dark shadow over all of their worlds. And on top of that, Jobu is looking for Evelyn. In the scene after this, Jobu sends one of her scions after Evelyn in the body of their tax agent, played by Jamie Lee Curtis, and Alpha Wayman's team coaches her on how to verse jump. So she accesses the minds and memories of another version of herself. This other version of herself is a powerhouse. She's not just a master at Kung Fu, she's also a celebrity in China and even a film star. Not only does Evelyn suddenly see into this other life, but she sees the path that she could have taken to become this person, this celebrated and successful person. With the skills that she gets from this other universe, she easily overpowers her attacker, but then, once it's over, she sits in that alternate self's world for a moment. She could have been this person, famous, talented, respected, if she'd made one choice differently. If she'd never gone to America with Waymond. Evelyn saves herself from Jobu's flunky, but then Jobu shows up herself in the body of Evelyn's own beloved daughter. Jobu shows Evelyn a hint of the chaos that Jobu lives with, how no matter what she imagines, she can make it real just by virtue of the unpredictable everything that she exists inside of. And then, for just a second, Jobu exposes Evelyn to her creation, her object of chaos, the everything bagel, literally everything. At the last moment, Evelyn is saved by Alpha Gong Gong, the version of her father from the Alphaverse, who makes a surprise appearance. He, Evelyn, and Alpha Wayman withdraw. Jobu is knocked out, but she'll be back up before long, and Alpha Wayman and Alpha Gong Gong don't agree on how to defeat her. So, all through the exposition, Evelyn's husband and father from another universe are fighting with her daughter from another universe because her daughter created a multiverse black hole by putting everything ever on a bagel. Jobu wants Evelyn to look inside the bagel. Gong Gong wants Jobu to be destroyed. Wayman wants Evelyn to somehow overcome Jobu's power. And now we're in the movie.
There is no way I am the Evelyn you are looking for.
No, I see you so clearly.
See what? I'm no good at anything.
Exactly. I've seen thousands of Evelyns, but never an Evelyn like you. You have so many goals you never finished, dreams you never followed. You're living your worst you.
Not the hot dog one.
No. Can't you see? Every failure here branched off into a success for another Evelyn in another life. Most people only have a few significant alternate life paths so close to them. But you, here, you're capable of anything because you're so bad at everything.
What good is all that power when her mind is already succumbing to that chaos?
Okay, so in that clip, Wayman describes Evelyn's life as a series of failures. He highlights her belief that she hasn't made anything of herself. And to be honest, I feel for that. Not necessarily like looking at my life as failures, but I feel like there's a lot of things that I started and then left behind. I'm a jack of all trades, master of none, but I've always really wanted to be a master of one. And I don't think I ever cared what that mastery was in, so long as it came with just a title, just attached to any title. Instead, I chase down interests until they're half complete and I get waist deep in it before I'm distracted by the next thing. But this thing of being fragmented, I think, goes deeper for me than not knowing what I want to be when I grow up. And to explain that, I want to look at a figure in the Bible who I always see myself in. Moses was a Hebrew born at a time when the Hebrews were enslaved by the Egyptians. The Pharaoh of Egypt wanted every boy of his generation dead, but they survived because of Hebrew women who refused to comply. Moses was a unique case even out of those child survivors. He was adopted by Pharaoh's daughter and raised in the palace, although he was nursed by his biological mother. As an adult, he kills an Egyptian to save a Hebrew's life. The word gets out about this, Pharaoh puts a price on his head, and he leaves the country, moving to Midian, which is iconic, honestly. He's a transracial adoptee, he's an emigre, he's an immigrant, he becomes a father to biracial children, he's caught between at least three worlds. In the scriptures, we can see Moses being identified by other people. Exodus 2:6 reads, "She opened it and saw the baby. He was crying, and she felt sorry for him. This is one of the Hebrew babies," she said. So here, he's a Hebrew. After this, his sister intervenes in the situation and has him taken back to his mother to be nursed until he's like 2 or 3 years old. In Exodus 2:10, it says, "When the child grew older, she took him to Pharaoh's daughter, and he became her son. She named him Moses, saying, 'I drew him out of the water.'" And in this one, he becomes an Egyptian, right? He's adopted by an Egyptian, and he's given his name by an Egyptian. In the following verse, "One day after Moses had grown up, he went out to where his own people were and watched them at their hard labor. He saw an Egyptian beating a Hebrew, one of his own people." So the narrative here names him a Hebrew, and he's doing things that bring him physically closer to Hebrew people. He's going out to see them. Twice in this verse, they're called his own people. And then after this is where he kills the Egyptian man. And then in verses 13 to 14, "The next day he went out and saw two Hebrews fighting. He asked the one in the wrong, 'Why are you hitting your fellow Hebrew?' The man said, 'Who made you ruler and judge over us? Are you thinking of killing me as you killed the Egyptian?' Then Moses was afraid and thought, 'What I did must have become known.'" So according to the person writing a book, he is Hebrew, and he feels comfortable enough to go up to these two people and commiserate with him, but they don't return that sentiment. He's not one of them enough that these other Hebrews will identify with him. Two more verses. So in verse 15, it says, "When Pharaoh heard of this, he tried to kill Moses, but Moses fled from Pharaoh and went to live in Midian, where he sat down by a well." So he's not Egyptian enough that Pharaoh lets his murder slide. And then he goes to Midian, and in verse 19, "They answered, 'An Egyptian rescued us from the shepherds. He even drew water for us and watered the flock.'" And the Midianites call him an Egyptian. He's not Egyptian, but he is Egyptian. So you might know that my parents are both mixed. My dad is black and Korean, and my mom is black and Cuban. And so I'm a mixed person in a family of mixed people. When I was 13, we moved to England, and we came back the year before I went to college. And when you move to a foreign country during a social growth period like adolescence, they call that being third culture. One thing I noticed about being mixed race in England was that it was easier. It was unpleasant in some ways because I was separated from all of my cultures, but it was easier. There I could just be the American rather than here in the US where people would try to take apart my racial identity. I think in middle school they settled on banana flavored Oreo, which if you know what that means, I'm sorry for your childhood. I always wonder if Moses found it easier to be in Midian where he was just a foreigner, than in Egypt, where he's caught in this complicated, tense experience of his race. I think about this guy all the time. He lives in a palace where nobody looks like him except for the help. His biological mother has been reduced to his nanny. People who look like him set the tables that he eats at, and everybody knows. Everybody knows. In like The Prince of Egypt and movies like that, Moses is presented as living a charmed life until he's thrown into his identity as an adult, but I don't know if that would have stacked up with the actual history. I think everybody knew that he was different, and I think that probably wasn't fun. Moses describes himself later in the book as not eloquent and slow of tongue, which, if you go back to the original Hebrew, translates to mercilessly bullied in grade school. I imagine him probably as being very confused, caught between a lot of things that he didn't see himself being authentically. So for me, my experiences of being mixed race and my experiences of not knowing what I want to do with my life are connected because they produce the same emotions. Frustration, isolation, feeling different, measuring yourself against other people, and not always liking how you scale. It feels like not seeing who you are because you know acutely what you're not. In the movie, Evelyn has disdain for the incomplete things in her life, and she only values the other universes where she turns into someone important or noteworthy. But in the next scene, Gong Gong threatens Joy to get at Jobu, and Evelyn is forced to defend her daughter. She doesn't have Alpha Waymond or his elite team to tell her which of her life paths is best suited or the most effective. She has to connect with random alternate selves, and she has to find something in those other pieces of her that can save her family.
Uh-huh.
she keeps going like this, and she ends up in one universe where she's a chef, and another universe where she's doing kung fu again, but this time she can only use her pinkies. She has to make the most out of the worst. Drawing on this weirdness, this partialness, she still manages to find something that she can use of value, something of value to herself. And every one of these universes spiraled off from something that Evelyn perceived as a failure. However, even this newfound appreciation of her alternate selves has a limit. Jobu is the natural endpoint of seeing yourself in different versions because she exists in all universes simultaneously. After seeing that Evelyn is starting to be able to access more and more universes, Jobu goes to speak with her. Jobu tells Evelyn that the reason she was looking for her in all these universes is because she wanted to find a version of her mother who could understand the world the way she did. Jobu shares the fullness of the multiverse with Evelyn, and it breaks her. At first, remember, Evelyn wanted to see more, to see all the shiny, beautiful people that she could have become and to walk in their shoes. But once she has all of them, none of them is important. Now that she can be whoever she wants, she comes to the same conclusion as Jobu, that nothing matters. She starts sabotaging her life in the universes that we, the audience, have come to know, in the universes that were important to her up until now. She signs Wayman's divorce papers. She doesn't turn in her tax forms. She tells their auditor to shut up, and when the auditor shows up at the laundromat to take the place over, Evelyn goes at the machines with a bat. She's ready to go with Jobu and walk inside the everything bagel. She's ready to choose oblivion, death, over the fractured existence that is the everything everywhere all at once. But then,
I'm 你终于成为了生存之道。
Jobu and Evelyn have been driving themselves crazy, comparing themselves to every other version of themselves. Even if they try to live their best life, there's another better self, or another worse self, or another much worse self out there to distract them. How can they feel love for themselves, or love being themselves, when they feel so scattered, when they feel so alone? But as Wayman shows, the point of it is not to go it alone, nor to use your abilities to have the best personal life. Wayman doesn't aspire to perfection. He doesn't aspire to anything in particular, but he only does his best to make the most of the life that he already lives. Wayman knows that life is difficult. He knows. But it's an active choice that he makes to be kind, to connect with the people around him, and to make the most of the small things. It is a farce to believe that there's a universe where you were only ever happy, only ever proud of yourself, only ever fit in, and only ever felt successful. Wayman's way of living is the antithesis of that pursuit. He maximizes the joy in his own life, not by serving himself, but by doing good for other people and taking joy in their joy. Wayman's way of living is an alternative to Jobu's nihilism and Evelyn's disregard. The simple, the fun, the joyful, other people. Wayman makes it all make sense. And Evelyn doesn't think at first that she can live his way, but she puts it into practice and it feels right.
Don't say that.
if you could go into the next clip too. We'll just do those back to back. Continues like that, and she manages to mow down all of these people who are attacking her just by giving them part of what they want. I think part of what this movie means to me is to try and learn the lesson that comes to Evelyn in my own life. Your different bits and pieces can serve you, and they can serve others. And sometimes even they don't have to serve, and that can be the most rewarding, to just be fully integrated in your own diversity. It's not just about loving what I have, but it's about not trying to create some different idealized life. I think historically I've been someone who strives hard for the next goal, always with the end point in mind, working to construct a life that I think other people can look at and admire. That impulse has been instinctual for me for a while, but I don't think it's healthy, and I don't think it's natural. I think to at least some extent it's a product of the academic and social environments I've been in. So for me, the issue is the striving itself, and for me, the answer is to not strive, to accept who I am and live it to the fullest. Since I've had this mental revelation and changed my mindset, what has happened has been nothing. I've been doing the same stuff as before, writing, hanging out with my friends, applying to jobs, but I've been enjoying it more by asking it to be less. It's still an impulse to put these boundaries around my life and to, you know, make the you can't have dessert until you've eaten your greens rules on the way that I live. But I am making conscious effort to reject that and to not put those walls around my happiness. I'm trying to find value in the ways of being that I never valued. I'm trying to seek out people who are Black, Asian, Latina, and weird queer geeks like I am. Moses's journey back to who he was started with racial recognition as well. Moses has the privilege of having the Creator God tell him what his life is for. The band can come up while I'm reading here from Exodus 3:6. Then he said, "I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob." The Lord says, "I am the God of your father," reaffirming Moses' lineage and asserting an ultimate statement of, "This is who you are because this is who you are with respect to me." God gives Moses his identity by pointing him back to God. And in the journey that I'm on, I don't know whether I'm going to receive that kind of like authoritative statement of purpose, but I do know that I can define myself in terms of the Creator who made me. At the end of the movie, none of the characters are perfect people. Evelyn is still kind of judgy and overly critical. Joy still only calls her parents when she needs something. And Wayman and Gong Gong weren't even there for the two women's character development because they were being body snatched by alternate versions of themselves. So there's still a lot for the family to work out. That's life. But they're present. They want to be with one another, and they show that. They want to make each other happy, and they do, and that's where their own happiness comes from. Despite the everything and the everywhere and the everything else, they're in the now, and they're living it to the fullest. I hope that we can all experience that same truth.
Thanks, Jesse. Please stand if you are able for our closing song. One, two, one, two.